snaps in two. Jones says the interview is terminated at 4:32 and closes his folder.
Dalloway will accompany you outside. We'll be in touch. Don't go too far, and if you need to leave the state, we'd appreciate you letting us know.
I called Lewis. I didn't think I could get back home by myself. I am numb and confused, the way you might feel when you wake up after fainting, and you're not sure what happened or where you are or why you're here. Will you come and get me? I asked, pleaded really.
Anna?
I was looking at my hands and I didn't see him approach. I look up and there he is, looking broken. And I don't know if it's for me or her anymore. And when he says, "What did you do, Anna?" I think he's going to cry. He helps me to the car, one hand on my elbow.
I asked my dad to take the kids tonight.
I nod. That's good. I wipe my tears with my sleeve. It's better for them to be there. They love being with him. I'm glad he could take them. It's nice of him.
Yeah.
We don't talk after that. When we get home, I go upstairs and lie down on the bed. I can't even describe to Lewis how frightened I am right now. He comes upstairs and hands me an Ambien and a glass of water. I take it wordlessly and fall into the abyss. It is dark and silent when I wake, and I already miss my kids more than I can say. Lewis is lying next to me, watching me. I turn to face him. Lewis?
Yes, babe.
I'm really scared. He takes my hand.
I know.
We go downstairs and he makes ham and cheese sandwiches for us, but I can't eat anything. I didn't do it, I tell him. She was fine when I left. But I also tell him we have to make plans because it's not looking good for me. I'm so confused, I say, my mouth trembling. I'm so scared, Lewis. They're going to put me in jail.
No, they won't. We'll get the best lawyers. We can afford it, right? We can use your prize money. We'll get the very best.
I don't tell him the prize money is a mirage right now. Yes, I say. You're right. We'll be fine. But if we're not,
you have to think positive, Anna.
Lewis, please. Listen to me. I want us to talk about the children, if something happens to me. He sits down at the table next to me, runs a hand through his hair. Will you promise me that you will look after them? That you will keep them safe? Maddie spends too much time on his Xbox, and we need to do something about that. And try to keep Carla off social media for as long as possible. They love you so much, Lewis. You're a wonderful, incredible father. But you'll have to be strong. He's crying.
I can't do it without you, Anna.
I reach for his hand. Sure you can. You're the best father, the best parent. Do you remember when Mateo fell off his bike that time? I laugh through my tears. Do you know how jealous I was that he called out to you instead of me? They adore you, Lewis. You're their whole world. He squeezes my hand.
I have to tell you something.
I can't. I just can't deal with anything else right now. I press my fingers against my temples. What? I say, without looking up.
I asked Maddie to fall off his bike that day and call out for me.
I wait, feeling a smile on my lips. You didn't.
I did. I paid him $5, too. I wanted to show you I was doing a really good job bringing up our children. You were flying, Anna. You were so smart, so successful. You were like a shining star, and I wanted you to see what a good job I was doing at home. $5 was a bargain, I think.
The Ninja Turtle plasters?
All part of the plan.
Seriously?
Cross my heart.
Wow.
I know.
He fell quite hard.
He's a great little actor.
He could have cracked his head.
True, true.
And Maddie went along with this?
$5.
I'm laughing now. I brush off my tears and rest my head on his shoulder. I can't believe you did that just to impress me.
He caresses my hair. I'll look after them. I give you my word.
But that's not what I wanted to hear after all. I wanted him to keep saying how it was all going to be okay. And we didn't even need to have this conversation. Because if Louis doesn't believe in me, then nobody will. Chapter 38. I lie in bed most of the morning. Louis brings me cups of tea and watches me, his eyebrows knotted together. Can I get you anything? He asks. He makes it sound like I'm ill and I need tending. He sits on the bed next to me.
I think the kids should stay with my dad another night.
Yes, I reply. Yes, you're right. They all right? They got to school okay?
It's Saturday, he says.
Of course.
They're good. They're with their friends. They don't know anything.
Okay, good. That's good, I say. Then wait till he leaves the room to bury my face into the pillow and bawl my eyes out. At one point, I think there's a knock on the door, and my heart lurches because I think it's them. They've come to arrest me, and I sit up. But it's next door. I should get up and get dressed, though, because they will come, won't they? I don't want them to find me like this. I reach for my phone to call June. She must be worried sick. I want to tell her I understand she had to tell them that my alibi was a lie. She must feel terrible. She doesn't answer, and I leave a message. Hi, it's me. My voice breaks. I'm home, I say, in case she thought I was arrested. God, that was scary. Call me soon.
I take a shower, get dressed in practical clothes, flat shoes, pants that don't require a belt. You never know, what if they take it away from me? I think about these things.
I expected to hear back from June, but there's no message. Louis made some calls and has found me a lawyer.
He's the best, he says.
I promise him that I'll call this afternoon. I don't tell him there's no money. There probably never will be. Go to the studio if you have to work, I say. There's nothing you can do here.
He takes my hand. You sure?
Of course. I want to visit June anyway. I don't add, while I still can. I leave another message, then drive over to June's house. I'm actually getting worried about her. It's not like her to not return my calls. Also, I desperately want to apologize. I should never have asked her to lie for me. Maybe she's angry about that I got her mixed up in this whole mess. I'll explain that I just panicked. I thought if the police knew I was there, that they would come for me. In the end, they did anyway. I am thinking all this as I walk up to her porch, hugging a potted purple hyacinth because I read somewhere they signify, please forgive me. I ring the doorbell, and after a moment I see her outline drawing near through the frosted glass pane. I quickly stand to the side with my arm extended so she'll see the plant before she sees me. I'm sorry, I blurt out as she opens the door, my head tilted, my eyebrows raised. Please forgive me?
God, she slaps her hand on her chest. You scared the bejesus out of me.
I recoil in surprise. I did. I'm sorry. I left you a bunch of messages. Well, three, anyway.
I wait, holding my pot plant against my chest, but she doesn't move.
I've come bearing gifts. One gift, anyway. And to say I'm sorry that I asked you to lie for me. That was wrong. You okay? They didn't give you a hard time, I hope. I told them it was my fault.
She stands there, a little shakily, and takes the plant from me.
Thank you. It's very nice.
She's smiling, but it looks forced and makes her lips twitch. I put one hand on my hip and tilt my head at her. What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm kind of busy, that's all.
I blink. I imagined myself coming here, moving piles of baking magazines from her couch and sitting down with a cup of that chai tea she makes, holding on to one of her flowery cushions. It never occurred to me she wouldn't want to see me.
Can I come in?
She glances over her shoulder.
Oh, sorry, you have guests?
Then it dawns on me, and I look around, trying to pry through her front window. I lean forward and whisper,
Is it the police? They're here?
No, the police aren't here. Nobody's here. I'm just tired, that's all.
I nod.
Of course. I should go. Oh God, June, I don't want to go. I'm so sorry, I can't say it enough. I'm probably going to be arrested, unless a miracle happens, and I can't imagine what that might be, so I might not see you again after this.
I pull out a used Kleenex from my coat pocket and wipe my nose. She tilts her head, and she looks so sad suddenly. We both are. She sighs and moves out of the way.
Thank you, I say in a small voice. I won't stay long.
She sets down the hyacinth plant on the small table and makes no move to unwrap it.
What happened, June? Is it because I asked you to lie for me? About the alibi? I'll say anything you want me to say. I'll tell them again, of course, that it's my fault.
I want her to say something, to make it better, offer solutions, do the June thing. But she just stands there, her arms crossed over her chest. We've moved into the living room, but she hasn't invited me to sit down yet. I glance around the room. As always, her coffee table is messy, covered with homemaking magazines, opened recipe books, empty cups and glasses, and small plates with a scattering of crumbs. June still hasn't moved. And then it dawns on me. She's afraid of me.
What's going on? I ask.
I found the necklace in my bag.
Both hands fly to my mouth.
Oh, no. Oh, please, let me explain.
Did you plant it on me?
No, I swear to God. On my children, never, ever.
I move to touch her, but she jerks away.
You remember when Carla was riffling through my bag for my purse the night you were looking after Maddie? I had it in there, and I panicked, remember? I knocked the bag from your shoulder, and I put it in one of the pockets because I didn't want Carla to find it. I didn't want Louis to find it either. I did it on the spur of the moment. I was going to tell you, but with Ryan and Jeff, I'm so sorry, June. I just forgot.
Then why did you have it? She asks.
Listen to me. When I went to see her, she had the necklace around her neck, and I was so upset I yanked it off her. That's how I got this, see?
I show her my hand, the light pink line only barely visible.
That's all. I put it in my pocket and I left.
She shakes her head slowly, her fingers on her lips.
You have to believe me. I didn't put it in your bag to hurt you. I just needed a hiding place, and I was going to tell you.
We stare at each other in silence for a moment. She looks like she's going to cry.
I should go, I say.
She nods. As I pass the hyacinth, on impulse, I start to unwrap the cellophane.
I'm telling you the truth, I say, my back to her.
Don't,
she says quickly. I turn around. She has one hand up, reaching toward the table.
What?
I follow her gaze. Half sticking out from under the pot is a small square of paper on which she has scribbled something. I shift the plant and pick it up.
Give it to me,
she snaps. Flowers direct, purple lisianthus and daisies. Next to that is the address of the university and a date. What's this? I'm still staring at it when she lunges, tries to grab it from me. I hold it up in the air. What is it? I ask again, more firmly this time, because purple lisianthus and daisies are the flowers that my mother always sends me. Always the same.
Give it to me, Anna.
This is the bouquet my mother sent me. I tap the note with one finger. And this is the online florist who delivered them, isn't it? On the day of the dinner in the hall. What's this about, June?
She's silent for a long time, biting the inside of her cheek, rubbing her hands over her arms like there's a draft in here.
June?
I know you sent them to yourself.
What?
She's shaking all over now.
I was trying to help you. I really, really wanted to help you because I liked you, Anna.
Her voice breaks and tears roll down her cheeks. She wipes them off with shaking fingers.
When they took you away yesterday, I wanted to find your mother, she says.
What? Why?
Because I thought you needed her. I thought it would be good for you, and she owed you, and she should be here for you right now. And I didn't know her last name or where she lived, but I remembered the flowers she sent because I was the one who took delivery, and I remembered the name of the store.
Oh, June.
But it wasn't her who sent them, she says.
Her eyes grow wild suddenly, like she's realized I'm standing here, barring her way, and she's looking for an escape.
Of course she sent them, I say gently.
No, she didn't. You did.
I shake my head vigorously.
No, that's not true. Don't say that.
They told me who sent them, and it was you, Anna. And you've done it before. You're a regular customer there, always the same bunch of flowers. You're sending them to yourself.
June, stop, please. You know how crazy you sound right now? Obviously, there's some mistake. The store got it wrong. They got it mixed up and gave you the recipient details, which is me. Don't you see? Think about it, June. Why would I do that? It makes no sense. Why would I send myself flowers and pretend to everyone they're from my mother?
Because she's dead.
Louis? I'm crying. Sobbing, really. Big, wet sobs that bubble up and explode in a series of snotty eruptions.
What's wrong, babe? Where are you?
I'm in my car, I say. I managed to drive away because I didn't want to sit outside June's house, but I only made it 2 blocks and I had to get off the road before I caused an accident.
You have to help me, Louis, I whisper.
Baby, I can't hear you. I don't understand what you're saying. Have you been in an accident?
No, it's June. She said...
She said what?
Oh, Louis, I did some bad things.
What things, babe?
I put my hand over my mouth so that no one hears me, even though I'm alone in the car.
I killed my mother,
I whisper. His silence is long and distant and slices at my heart. I think he's hung up. Out of the blue, a thought pops into my head. Did he already know?
What did you do?
Am I crazy?
I bring my hand over my eyes.
I'm so frightened, I can't bear it.
Oh, Anna, honey.
I killed my mother.
I can barely speak after that. Every word comes out chopped, lurching into the next. It's like I'm speaking in Morse code. Everything has to be interpreted, linked into a sentence.
My mother has been dead for 16 years. I've been sending myself flowers.
No, Anna, no.
Louis, I'm so sorry.
Again, I drop my voice so low that maybe even I can't hear it.
Listen to me, Anna.
His tone makes me snap to attention.
I don't know what June thinks she's doing, but you did not kill your mother. Do you hear me? That's insane. Don't you think we would know if your mother was dead?
I don't know, I wail. Would we?
Yes, of course. Don't listen to June, Anna. Come home now. We'll call your mother together, and then we'll go and talk to June, okay?
I haven't spoken to my mother in such a long time, Louis.
He is silent for a moment. When he speaks again, his tone is different, softer, but heavier, weighted with pity. It's going to be okay, Anna. No matter what you did, baby, I love you. I will always love you. I'm here for you. No matter what. A man with a dark beard knocks on my window. You all right? He mouths. I nod, raise my hand. Thank you, I wave. Please go, I'm all right. The man hesitates, then tips his hat and walks away. But I'm not all right. I'll never be all right. And what is going to happen to my kids when I die? Because I'm going to die. People like me don't get second chances. They're going to put me in prison for a very long time for all the bad things I did. Where are you? I ask.
At the studio. But I'll come home as soon as I can. I'll see you there, okay, babe? We'll call your mom together. And everything will be fine, you'll see. No matter what happens, Anna, we'll get you some help, I promise. No matter what. But it will be okay. You'll see.
How long will you be?
1 hour, max, okay? Don't go back to June's on your own, please, babe. Wait for me. We'll find out exactly what's going on together, you and me. Then we'll go back and tell June, together. It's going to be okay. I promise.
Thank you, Louis. I'm sorry.
I love you, Anna. No matter what, okay?
I love you too. I'm so sorry.
Chapter 39. I start the engine. Then I sit there, letting it idle.
I don't know what to do.
I can't bear to go home and be on my own, so I drive to the studio because all I want right now is Louis. I desperately want him to hold me, to help me make it right, even though I know nothing can ever be right again. The police will come for me soon. Hey, maybe they're at the house already. I have so little time, and all I want is to curl up on the sofa and maybe watch him work. Just to pretend for a little while that none of this is happening. I let myself into the building and up the goods lift. I knock on the heavy door, but he doesn't hear me. I rest my forehead against the cold metal. I can faintly hear music inside. I pry the key loose from its trusted place and let myself in. Louis? His large sculpture, the nest, is back. It's bigger than I remembered. More somber, too, somehow. I walk around it and to the other end of the studio and turn off the sound system. Louis? I check my cell, but there's no message. I stare at the sculpture. The nest. His apogee. I think how much I wanted him to succeed. How much I supported him, loved him, trusted him, admired him. And that work, his grand masterpiece, it should have been about us. The nest, it should have been for me. And I can't stop crying as I think back to that night at the opening.
Isabel might have a shot at selling the nest to the Contemporary Art Museum for their permanent collection.
I think of him crossing his fingers, his eyes closed, his face turned to the ceiling, and I remember the words that floated in my mind then, like a whisper. He's in love. I don't know what happens after that.
I just feel all the pent-up pain and fury roar through me, and before I can stop myself, my hands have gripped the long metal rod that seconds ago was leaning by the window, and I'm screaming as I raise the rod over my head and strike the sculpture as hard as I can. But the hook gets caught on something, and I pull the rod up and blindly thrash into it again and again and again until the cables snap and the whole structure falls with a loud crash, and the creatures in their eggs roll out, and I smash them too. I smash their faces and their eyes and the delicate shell around them, and I'm screaming because they should have represented our children, shouldn't they? This should have been our nest, shouldn't it, Louis? Didn't we deserve this homage to your genius, Louis? Weren't we enough for you that you had to fall in love with her? And I can't see anything anymore, and it's all his fault, and everything I did for us. And all there is now is noise and dust and splinters flying and bouncing against the walls, and I'm still screaming, and I can't breathe, but I don't want to stop until it's gone, until that thing that sits there like a monument to all that went wrong is gone. I am on my knees. I drop the rod with a clank. I can't breathe. I don't know how long I sit like that, in the middle of the wreckage, my arms wrapped tightly around my sides. I open my eyes and see the creatures at my feet, broken, eyes smashed, no longer pleading, like they were real and now they're dead. And suddenly I have this overwhelming urge to put them back together. I scramble around the floor to find the right pieces and grab a chunk of the shell, then another, and I want to put them back together, but they don't fit. I stare at them in my hands, sobbing. Something catches my eye. Letters. Words. The shells were made of paper, glued together and shaped. I pull it apart gently and smooth the creases out as much as I can. And I see now what caught my eye. It's my name on an official document, or what's left of it. It's stained with dark spots, like it was kept somewhere damp for a long time. It's a residential purchase agreement for the house I grew up in Youngstown. What I think of as my mother's house after my father died, before she moved to California. I know that my mother sold that house and moved years ago, but I don't understand why Louis would have a copy of this purchase agreement. I look closer, and I know then that something isn't right with me, that I'm doing things I have no memory of doing because the seller on that document is not my mother. It's me. It says it right there. In 2006, I owned and sold my mother's house to a complete stranger. I gather the other pieces I can find, carefully separate layers of paper and smooth them out as much as I can, and now I'm wailing like an animal, because Louis said my mother was alive, and of course she wasn't dead, he said. Wouldn't we know? But he must have known, because this, in my hand, is a piece of her death certificate. And when I look at it again, it's as if the light dims around me and the walls are closing in, and I throw it to the floor and push myself away from it as far as I can. And I hit the wall with my back and I'm stuck there, shaking, crying, calling his name, and I'm so scared. I'm losing my mind because the manner of death is accidental fall on stairs. The floor is littered with debris, and as I scurry around on my hands and knees, blood roaring in my ears, I catch sight of something long and strange and out of place. I pick it up. It's some kind of tube, partly transparent, with a yellow and white sticker. And at first I think it's a tube of solder wire, and it's only when I read the label that I realize what it is. EpiPen. I haven't seen this exact type before. It's different from the ones that you would see today, but that's what it is. And my heart knocks around in my chest because I know, without a shadow of a doubt, that this belonged to Monica.
It falls out of my hand and disappears under the couch. I'm on my knees and I peer underneath. It's been stopped by something small and shiny, like a button, and I have to extend my arm as far as I can to reach it. I feel it with my fingertips, but accidentally nudge it away. I have to use the rod to drag it out, and it slides out, along with the shiny button. Except it's not a button. It's a ring. Silver. Oddly shaped. He's a very interesting metal artist. French. Chapter 40. My chest feels so tight. Even drawing in a breath feels like a burn. I have to calm down. I make myself breathe, but it hurts, like a stitch. I close my eyes, my forehead against the steering wheel, the phone pressed hard against my ear, and I notice my hand is bleeding. I press my fingers between my eyes as the call goes to voicemail. Louis? My voice cracks, and for a moment I think I can't do it. I can't summon the will to pretend that everything is as before, that nothing's changed. I have discovered nothing. Then I think of my kids and I bend down at the waist, a hand over my mouth covering a silent wail. When I take a breath again, it's like I've come out from underwater. Louis, it's me. Are you home yet? I need to talk to you. Will you call me as soon as you get this? I hang up and call June. Pick up. Pick up, pick up, pick up.
Hi, I'm sorry I can't take your call right now, but please leave a message.
June! My voice is high-pitched with panic. It's me. Listen to me very carefully. If Louis comes over to your house, do not answer the door. Do you understand? Pretend you're not there. If you're home, go out now as soon as you get this. Go anywhere. Go to the mall. Stay out. But under no circumstances should you let him inside your house. I hang up and dial again. I do it twice more. I tell myself it doesn't mean anything that she's not picking up. June doesn't know what to think of me right now. I bet she hates me. She's convinced I killed Isabel and maybe even tried to pin it on her. She believes I'm insane and I'm dangerous. Of course she's not taking my call. I call Louis's dad. He answers on the first ring, his voice raspy by decades of smoking.
Anna, you okay? I heard.
Rob, is Louis there?
Louis? No, why? Should he be? I thought Carla and Maddie were staying till tomorrow.
Listen, Rob, if Louis comes over, don't let him leave till I get there, all right? Tell him to wait for me. I'll be there shortly.
Is everything all right?
Yes, everything is fine. I'll see you soon. Call me if Louis gets there before me. But I will go to June's house first, and if she's not home, I'm going to leave her a note. That's what I'll do. I'll tell her in writing. And if she is there but won't let me in, I'll scream it in the window. Then I'll go and get my kids. That's what I'll do.
I drive so fast I almost have an accident, twice. At June's, I abandon the car across the road and run to her house. I slam on the door with both hands. Open the door. But she's not there. I turn to rush back to my car, find a piece of paper to write on, when I catch something in the window. It's the blinds. They've moved, I'm sure of it. Just an inch, like someone is peering through the slats. I slap the glass with the palm of my hand. June, I know you're in there. I have to talk to you. I'm frantically searching for a rock at my feet, something to throw, when the blinds suddenly fly up in one quick rush, and I scream.
Louis's face stares back at me.
You shouldn't have come, babe.
He has opened the front door and pulled me inside.
Oh my God.
June is tied up in the corner, a scarf tied around her mouth. Her eyes are red, wild with terror. I rush to help her, but Lewis has wrapped an arm around my shoulders and he's pulling me back.
You shouldn't have come. I told you not to come here, Anna. Didn't I say? Don't go to June. Wait for me at home. Didn't I say that?
You have to let her go. She has nothing to do with anything.
She shouldn't have tried to track down your mother,
he shouts, pointing at her.
And that's on her, okay?
He turns around and grabs his hair with his fists, pacing the room.
I have to take care of it now. I'm taking care of it.
I'm crying so much I can barely speak. Who are you? What did you do, Lewis? Did you really do all those things? Did you really hurt all these people? He looks into my eyes for a long time. Then his face slowly crumbles with misery.
Don't look at me like that. Of all people, Anna, you're the only one who would understand.
He drops to his knees and holds on to my jacket, his face upturned, pleading.
What are you doing here, Lewis?
I've come to take care of June, he says quietly. You have to trust me, Anna. Everything will be fine. I promise.
No. Please don't hurt her. I'm begging you. You have to let her go.
He pulls me down so that we're both on our knees. He takes my hands in his.
Come on, babe. You understand, don't you? Of course you do. Because you're dark like me. We're the same, you and me.
No, Lewis, we're not.
We're going to be okay. I'll take care of this, then we'll get the kids and we'll go away. The four of us, okay? We'll go wherever you like.
What did you do to Isabel, Lewis?
I made a mistake. I told you that. I should never have done it. I could never be with someone like Isabel. Women like that, they're too bright, too shiny, too perfect. It was just a fling, that's all, but she wanted more. She wanted to have a baby, and how could I leave you?
We have to go to the police, now.
No, we don't have to do that. I'll take care of everything, I promise. You understand, don't you?
He grips my hands tightly and pulls me closer to him.
You're made of dark waters like me.
And he says it again.
We're the same, you and me.
No, Lewis, we're not. We're not the same.
No one loves me like you do, he says. You're obsessed with me, see? And I'm obsessed with you.
And I think back to all the times he said it. You're obsessed with me. And I thought it was pure, true love. And all the time it was something so much darker than that.
You and me? We would do anything for each other. We'd kill for each other. I've always known that about you. But Isabel, she wanted to break us. I made a mistake, I admit that. But I couldn't let her do that to us. You see that, babe, don't you?
Why did you go there that night? I ask.
Because she called me after you left, and she said she told you about the baby, and I was free now to be with her. But I didn't want to be with her, Anna. I didn't want the baby. So I turned on the light in my shed and put some music on and locked the door so that when you came home, you'd think I was in there. Then I went to her house and I tried to talk to her. I really did. But she wouldn't listen. And she was going to tell Patrick and Perry at the gallery and everyone she knew that she was having my baby. And I couldn't do that to us, babe. You see that, don't you?
I dislodge one hand and wipe my cheeks. He grabs it again.
Did you push her down the stairs?
She was so mad. She threw the ring I gave her at my face and she was going to tell everybody. And I pretended I was sorry. I pretended to kiss her and I said, let's go upstairs, let's go to bed. And then
he raises his shoulder slightly.
She fell,
he says simply.
Lewis, no. Oh, God.
I feel sick,
and I don't want to ask my next question. I don't want to, but I know I have to.
What about Monica?
That was an accident. I swear to God. I wanted to go with you to that party. Remember that party?
Of course I remember that party.
I knew she'd taken back a piece of cake from the cafeteria that day, he continues. She always did that. Remember how she always did that? She'd keep it in a tin with flowers on it, remember that? And pick at it while she finished her assignment.
Yes, I remember, I say.
I crushed some peanuts together into crumbs, then I told her to meet me somewhere, that I had a present for her, so she'd be out of the room. I went in there and sprinkled it over the piece of cake and took her EpiPen. I rushed back to where she was waiting and gave her a drawing pad. Remember how she used to draw all the time? She thought we were going to meet later at the party, but I'd already fallen in love with you, you see. I just wanted it to be you and me. I thought she would be sick and go to bed. I didn't know she would die. I swear to God, I didn't know.
I drop my head in my hands, but he grabs them again, holds on to them so tightly he's crushing them.
You understand, don't you?
June makes a sound in the corner, like a moan. And my mother?
He lets go of my hands and grabs a fistful of his hair.
Your mother. She was nasty, you know that. She said to me there was something not right about me, and she found out some things about me. Some things I did that landed me in detention when I was a kid, but I wasn't like that anymore, not since I met you. And I told her that, but she wanted to tell you. She wanted to break us up, Anna. And I...
He doesn't say any more, just looks around wildly, rubbing his face, pulling at his hair.
After she died, I panicked. I didn't know how to tell you. I pretended she was still alive. The police said it was an accident anyway, and you two weren't speaking at the time. And you never liked her. She was horrible. But then when Carla was born, you wanted to reconcile, and I just kept pretending. I pretended she'd moved away. I picked a place as far away from us as I could, and I bought a P.O. box in her name. And I really thought you'd give up. But you didn't, and you invited her to Christmas and birthdays, and I'd send flowers and send emails, and you'd call her and leave messages, but she'd never call back, just send you emails, and it just got out of hand.
But you sent the flowers in my name, not yours, I cry. Why? Did you rent the box in my name, too?
He takes my face in his hands.
I thought if anyone found out, it would be easier to explain that way, see?
He looks at me, pleading.
I'd had enough of all the lies, of sending flowers, of pretending your mother was alive. I was going to send you a letter from her to say she never wanted anything to do with us, that she was moving away and not to contact her again. I made the nest for us, Anna. I put all that stuff in it. Your mother's things, the EpiPen, some other things you wouldn't know about. I wanted to get rid of these things and start again. But I couldn't just burn them. I had to do something more, something transformative, a new beginning. That's why I had to make something big out of it, something for us. That's why I took Isabel's ring and put it in. And then I was going to sell it. It would sit somewhere in a gallery. And only I'd know. And it would be like a song to us. Do you see?
I'm shaking my head, crying so much I can't speak.
We don't need to tell anyone anything, Anna. No one needs to know. Not about your mother, not about Isabel, not about Monica.
Oh God, Louis. Yes, they do. I wipe my nose with the back of my hand. They will know about Isabel. They'll figure it out. And there's June.
Don't worry about June, babe. I'll take care of June.
You have to let her go.
I'll tell everyone what you did if you hurt her. You have to let her go, Louis.
I've turned around and I'm on my knees, scrambling to get to my feet, but he grabs my ankle and I fall, hitting my head against the corner of the coffee table. He's yelling for me to stop. He's shouting, "Where are you going? What are you doing?"
He wants me to listen, but I can't listen anymore, and I'm screaming and kicking him. And there's a second when he lets go and yelps in pain, and there's a door next to the fireplace, and I've lunged through it and slammed it shut after me, and I lean against it, panting. It's June's bedroom.
What are you doing?
Babe!
Don't make me do this!
Anna!
He's kicking the door, and I'm screaming for him to stop. And suddenly he's on top of me, and he pulls my hair and slams the side of my head on the floor. And I'm clawing for something, anything. And with one hand, I've grabbed the leg of the bedside table, and I've pulled it so hard the lamp has come crashing down. And Lewis is swearing, and I can't reach the lamp, and I claw at the drawer of the table, grappling blindly. And then I feel it. Small, hard, metallic. June's gun. I've kicked him hard in the face, and he holds his nose, his face scrunched up in pain, and I'm on my feet, my arms outstretched, my hands shaking so hard I don't know how long I can hold it. Lewis drops his arms to his sides. His nose is bleeding. He shakes his head slowly.
No, don't.
Then suddenly his hands are on my face, and there's a noise, so fast, so sharp, it rips through the air, and just as quickly, silence. Except for a high-pitched sound, like a whistle. Lewis smiles so sweetly, and his eyes fill with tears, and when he mouths the words, I love you, it's pure and real, and he looks down at the blood on his chest, and I scream, but I can't hear myself, just the high-pitched noise. And when he falls, I fall with him and hold him tight, and I say it to him over and over. I'm obsessed with you.
Chapter 41. I stand at the window, gazing at the trees filled with brilliant white blooms. They're all over campus, blossoming in unison, tall and dense, wide and round at the bottom and pointy at the top, which has always struck me as poetic, since they're ornamental pears, and they really are shaped a bit like the fruit they bear.
Hey!
I turn around. June has walked in with a plate of cookies. I laugh.
A selection of your favorites, she says, setting it down on the desk.
We hug even though I saw her this morning. I stay with her in her new place whenever I've needed to return for the investigation. I grab a cookie and sit down at my desk, which is not really my desk anymore, although no one has filled this office yet. It's so quiet around here, I say.
I know, spring break, no students. Don't you love it?
I sure do. It's the first time I've been back to Locke Wideman since Lewis died. So I'm grateful there are very few students around. I don't think I could handle the stairs, although I'm getting a lot better at that.
How is Roberto? She asks.
I smile. She's the only one who calls him that, and I think he secretly loves it. I smile. Rob's wonderful. He's been taking the kids fishing a lot.
They'll love that, she says.
I will never forget. And I've said this so much lately. The day Lewis's father, Rob, came to get me outside the courthouse. We had just found out so many things about Lewis. That he had been forging my signature for years. That he signed for my inheritance. That he forged a power of attorney to act on my behalf so he could sell my mother's house once enough years had passed. And he kept the money, too. He never spent it. All this time it's been sitting in a term deposit account which he had opened, also in my name. But there was one thing I never knew, which was that when Lewis was young, he set fire to a man and killed him. No one knows the circumstances exactly, and he was charged with involuntary manslaughter. Because of his age, he went to juvenile detention for 8 months. Somehow, my mother found out and tried to tell me. But everything I believed about that still stands. It may have been the truth, but the only reason she wanted me to know was to hurt me, to push me to end the relationship because she just didn't like to see me happy. It would have made no difference if she'd told me. I would have believed with all my heart whatever Lewis did back then had been involuntary. But that day on the lawn outside the courthouse, Rob broke down and sobbed on my shoulder because he'd never told me about it.
"But we both thought he was good and kind," I said. "You didn't know either what he was capable of. You thought he'd made a mistake. You didn't want it to tarnish the rest of his life. I would have done the same for my kids."
But he put a hand over his eyes and asked if I was going to forbid him from seeing his grandchildren now.
"They're all I have left," he said.
"So come and live with us," I replied. "They adore you. You're on your own now. Apart from me, you're the only family they have left. You're the only family I have left." And he sobbed again on my shoulder for a long time, but with relief and some joy too, I think. I've resigned from Locke Wideman, sold our house, and we've moved to Martha's Vineyard, to a small but charming rented house. The money I got from the sale of our house is not enough to buy something over here, and until earlier this week, I didn't know if I'd ever get the money in the term deposit account. I'm not sure I want it anyway. And I certainly won't be receiving the prize money. The Forrester Foundation has kindly allowed me more time to give them my notebooks, but I'd already decided to refuse the prize. I wanted to wait until the district attorney concluded his investigation to tell them formally and explain that it was Alex who solved it, with a little help from me, and that the prize should be awarded to him posthumously. Maybe his parents will use it to create a scholarship in his memory, especially now that the medical examiner has officially ruled his death was suicide. This came about because of his ex-girlfriend, a young woman called Lauren who used to go out with him when they were together at NYU. She'd broken it off, but he had refused to accept it. After 2 years of behavior that bordered on stalking, he had emailed her to say he wanted to show her something. And after that, he promised he would no longer harass her. It was the last thing he was asking of her. I don't know the exact details of all this, but suffice to say, she flew over to visit him, without telling her parents, who would have forbidden it. When she arrived at the apartment, the door was not quite closed. He wasn't there. She walked in, waited, and she left. The consensus was that he had hoped she would understand he had killed himself because of her, and he wanted her to know. Did I leave the door open? I must have, because when I saw her picture, I knew she was the young woman I'd passed on the stairs that day. Not because of her face, I never looked at her, but because of her ring. A class ring in the colors of NYU, silver and purple. I don't know what he wanted to show her, and I don't think he was going to kill himself. But some days I think maybe he was, and other days I think he was not well, and he didn't know what he was doing. But even without all that, it's a big letter to write, and my head just wasn't in it, so I waited until the district attorney's decision, which has been made as of last Monday. The DA decided on the evidence that there was no need to take the case to the grand jury, so I'm free. I will write that letter today, make things right, and after I've packed the rest of my things from this office, I'm going home to my kids. I point at a package on the desk, a UPS mid-size box. "What's this?" I ask June.
"I don't know. It came for you last week. How long are you staying, by the way?"
I pick it up, turn it around. "I'm going back tonight. You want to join us for your break? We'd love to have you."
"Yes, please," June beams. "I've been brushing up on my chess skills. I can't wait to try them on Maddie."
I laugh. Rob has taught Maddie to play, and now Maddie's obsessed. And he's very good. He played all the time with June over Christmas, and again when she came over last month, and she only beat him once.
How are they?
She asks, as I retrieve a pair of scissors from the drawer and cut through the tape. I stop, tilt my head at her. You know, last time you were there, I heard Maddie laugh for the first time. He sounded the way he used to. It was the most beautiful sound. She nods, and her eyes water. And Carla has made some friends, and there's a light returning in her eyes. I take a breath. I think they're going to be okay.
And you? She asks.
But it's a joke between us, because I reply, I'm okay, and you? And she'll say,
I'm okay, and you?
Until we laugh. It's stupid, but it's our stupid. It's all part of our way of coping. It's taken a lot of therapy for June to be where she is now. She's only just returned to work, and she's been promoted to senior administrator in the English department, but she doesn't know how long she'll stay. Not very long is my bet. It's taken a lot of therapy for me, too, but I have my kids, and Rob. And I never say this to anyone, but I miss Lewis. I miss him so much some nights I cry myself to sleep. June gets to her feet and brushes her hands.
I should get back to it. Lunch?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll come get you around 1.
After she's gone, I finally open the UPS box. Inside is an envelope with my name on it, and below it is another, smaller cardboard box. But this one is different. It's old and battered, like something you might have kept in an attic for the last 50 years. It isn't sealed, and I lift the flaps. It's the smell that hits me. An image of my old school flashes into my mind, and for a surreal moment I am transported to another place and another time. I pick up the letter and slide my finger inside its flap. Dear Dr. Sanchez, you wouldn't remember me, but we met once. My name is Vernon, and I used to share Alex's condo in Tremont. In the chaos of moving out, I accidentally packed some of Alex's things, and everything has been in storage until now, which is why I haven't returned these to you before. These notebooks belonged to Alex, but as they bear your name, I am returning them to you. Sincerely, Vernon Tuckey. I open the box again. Inside are plain, wire-bound notebooks of varying colors. I know the style well. I used the same when I was at school. But these are old and musty, discolored in places. I pull out the first notebook from the pile and open the page, and there's a moment when it feels like the room tilts as I read my own name in my own childish handwriting on the first page. Anna Miller. I snatch Vernon's letter from the table and read it again. But as they bear your name, this makes no sense. And how would Vernon know my maiden name? I pull all the notebooks out, more frantic now. 12 of them in total. The Penty Stone Conjecture, A Solution, by Anna Miller. It's like reading another girl's old schoolwork. Pages and pages of mathematical equations in small, dense handwriting that starts neat in the early pages, but seems to trip over itself by the last ones. Lines and lines of calculations framed by doodles of flowers, round petals floating over the margins, sometimes Hope's name with a little heart to it, my mother's diagonal flick of the pen across the page. I did this? Yes, I did. I know it, but I don't. I recognize the sequences, the logic, the rationality, the inferences, but I recognize them from Alex's notebooks. And I am shocked that, at the time, I didn't recognize my own work. Then I see why Vernon returned them to me. Inside the cover page of a number of them is written, Dr. Anna Sanchez, Senior Lecturer, Mathematics Department, Locke Wideman University. I know that handwriting, and it's not mine,
It's Alex's. I flick through every notebook, every page, more frantic now. They are riddled with his notes, exclamation marks, excited markings. So close. Yes. No. Why? I lift the old cardboard box and study it, looking for a clue. On its side, in blue marker, is written, $2 the lot. I vaguely remember when I moved out of home to go to college, my mother had a yard sale of all the things I was leaving behind, including my textbooks. She could have written this. This could well be her handwriting. This box would have contained my math books, too. She would have packed the whole lot together. How it came to be in Alex's possession? I don't think I'll ever know. I go through each notebook again, one by one, and I am shocked at how far I had come to solve the Penty Stone. But I remember distinctly showing these to my mother, my heart quickening with anticipation and her shaking her head. No, Anna, that's not right. Try again. But it was right. How could she not see it? Did she deny it on purpose, because she didn't want to live up to her end of the bargain? If you solve the Penty Stone, then you can go and play. She never believed I could solve it. She never bothered to check my work. She just slashed the pen across the page with barely a glance. No, that's not right. Try harder. And how could I not remember these? Is this what trauma does? Makes you block things out. I remember nothing that is in these notebooks other than the pain and the frustration they still evoke now. The moment my mother released me from working on the Penty Stone conjecture, I banished the content from my mind, but I could not forget the anger, the sadness, and I never wanted to think of it again until Alex brought it up, and then I had to. I'd come so close. As close as Alex was when he showed me his own drafts. Which makes sense, since they were mine. I remember him coming to the university. Because of me, he'd said. He'd read a paper I'd published, a perfectly ordinary paper on Brownian motion, a topic completely unrelated to the Penty Stone. I must do my thesis here, with you, he'd said. Of course he had. He already knew he was going to tackle the Penty Stone when he came to Locke Wideman. He was smart enough to know what these notebooks contained. The solution, except for one missing piece. He must have come to the conclusion he couldn't finish it alone, so he tracked me down. And irony of ironies, I finished it for him. I came up with the last piece of the puzzle. I called him in the middle of the night. What if? Then I let him take all the credit because I'd only contributed that tiny morsel, believing he'd done everything else. He hadn't. I had. And after that, I was no longer needed. I've changed my mind. I go through them again, slowly this time. Then I open the last notebook to the last page of equations. There are still blank pages, untouched, at the back of that notebook, and I grab a bureau from the holder, and without having to look it up, I proceed to write down the last piece of the proof. The letter I write to the Forrester Foundation, 2 hours later, is not the one I thought I'd write. It's a lot shorter, for one thing. And it makes my heart sing for another. Dear Jack, I trust the enclosed 12 notebooks comply with your requirement for supporting documentation detailing my process to arrive at the solution. With gratitude and kind regards, Dr. Anna Sanchez, née Miller. This recording of Unfaithful was presented by Dreamscape Media, LLC. Narrated by Emily Rankin and produced by Eric Black. Text copyright 2020 by Natalie Borelli.
Sound recording copyright 2020, Dreamscape Media, LLC. Please check dreamscapepublishing.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.